Irina Bogatyreva, Seizure, translated by Arch Tate. I was hitchhiking from point A to point B through the indeterminate vastness of our boundless land, not alone but with the lean, contemplative lad whom the well-meaning owners of my recent place of rest had suggested as a companion. Our travel plans coincided, but we were making slow progress. It was a hot summer, the asphalt melting and yielding beneath heavily laden trucks, radiators overheating. In a single day, we abandoned two vehicles with boiling radiators, leaving them, like horses ridden into the ground, to their fate on the road. We were crossing the steppe in the Volga region, but there was no water anywhere near the highway. The drivers had no choice but to wait for their engines to cool, and we were in a great hurry. What could we do but abandon them and hitch on? The road, however, is unforgiving towards the egotistical, and in the end, nobody was stopping for us. We split up to make ourselves more mobile, standing well apart and thumbing on our own accounts. Almost immediately, I was picked up by a truck headed for a suburb of Point B and thought we had been well advised to separate. No truck would pick up two hitchhikers. Only a couple of days later did I learn that my mate had got himself a lift in an air-conditioned jeep. We would both have fitted in nicely, backpacks and all. He traveled the rest of the way with the wind in his sails, arrived by nightfall, and then had to wait 24 hours for me at our prearranged crash pad. I proceeded at a more leisurely pace with the talkative trucker. His name was Vlad, and he was not only talkative, but exceedingly amorous. After driving for an hour, he announced he fancied a session in the sack with me. This came as a considerable surprise, and I was fairly sure he must be joking, because by this time I was a month into traveling freely around the country and had presently been 5 days on the road. If I wasn't exactly stinking, I had been well kept by campfires. When hitching, I always dressed so as to make it hard to tell whether it was a boy or a girl standing at the roadside. More to the point, in my tribulations, I invariably forgot what sex I was and all matters relating to feminine allure. Summer was the road. Tramping, mountains, sun, barbarity, solitude, and hitchhiking. I was an unkempt, asexual freak, bearing a backpack as big as myself. My trucker's proposition had me laughing hysterically for a full 5 minutes. Except he was serious, and I had to employ all my rhetorical skills to persuade him he was deluded in seeing me as an appropriate object of his lust. Not for an instant did I consider getting out of the truck. Everybody knows you shouldn't change horses in midstream. But my driver proved an obstinate nag and tried tenaciously to persuade me I wouldn't be disappointed. "I've got a boyfriend," I said, searching for a straightforward human excuse. "What? That drip? The one standing ahead of you? Call that a boyfriend? He's never going to show you a good time. You don't know what love is, kiddo. What you need is a real man." "I make it a principle not to do it on the road." "Quite right, too. Do you think I'm a weirdo? We won't do it on the road, we'll find a turning this evening and have it off there." He had a huge belly, although he wasn't old. I looked at him, increasingly surprised at his persistence. "Good roadside tarts have died out," he lamented. "The whole way from Nizhny Novgorod, I didn't see one you can fancy. If it isn't little schoolgirls, it's old woman pushing 50. What's happened to the fanciful ones? Gone off and got married, have they? What sort of perv would I be to go after a skirt like that?" I sneaked a glance at myself in the side mirror. A freckled, snub-nosed, almost anime face looked back at me, wild-eyed with dirty, matted hair. I looked barely 20, although I was older than that. What could he be seeing in me? I looked away from the mirror with a sigh. "What is it? Don't you like me?" Vlad asked without turning to me. "I do like you, as a person."
"Well, great, let's do it."
"No. It's precisely because I like you that we're not going to do it." "I don't get it. I don't want to ruin your life."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean literally. I'm a witch. Sleeping with me is dangerous," I blurted out. Now it was his turn to laugh, as if demons were tickling his armpits. He let go of the steering wheel and practically swerved into the oncoming lane. I sat beside him, unsmiling and dismayed.
"Come on, kiddo, don't lay it on too thick. This isn't my first day behind the wheel.
It's not my first day hitching either, Gramps."
"Well, go on, prove it."
"How?"
"Well, what can you do, witch?"
"Oh, just little things. I can treat a few ailments, colds, patch up family quarrels, bits and pieces. Nothing too difficult." I faltered, hoping he would let it drop
and not, of course, saying a word about the odd, cruel gift which has burdened me all my life, giving me nightmares and headaches and my sick, unsociable personality. "Can I put the evil eye on someone?" he asked. "I won't, if you don't keep pestering me." "No, I don't believe it. It's a lot of garbage. You need to show me something."
"Show you what?"
"Okay, not a striptease. Just show me something you can do." I scrutinized him for a moment and then I lost it. I started telling him about his life, that he had a jealous wife, that he didn't love her, and that she was always going on at him about not earning enough. I told him he had piles and gastritis and catarrh. I told him he loved his 5-year-old son and sometimes took with him on shorter trips. I told him his elder brother had been killed in a headlong collision 2 years before while drink driving, and that his boss at the transport firm where he worked wanted to fire him, but he shouldn't worry about it. If he did get fired, he would find a better job with better pay within a couple of weeks, and things would work out for them. Unless, of course, he harmed me now.
I don't know what had startled him most, but half an hour later he was still sitting there, as white as a sheet, and it wasn't just the heat making him sweat. He kept intoning meditatively the same obscene word. I could see the state he was in. It scared me, and I kept very quiet. After all, he was the driver. And as they say, the devil is always at your elbow. But what had I taught him anyway? All those ailments, they just go with the territory of being a long-distance trucker. The only one I had left out was rheumatoid arthritis, because for the moment I couldn't remember all the varieties. He had told me about his wife himself, and the fact that he was obsessed with anything in a skirt made it clear there were problems at home. His son's toy Kamaz truck was in the cab with us, and his little baseball cap was tucked in behind his sun visor. I guess the kid's age, from its size. He had been grumbling about difficulties with his boss, and I just made up the bit about his future prospects to lighten the rest of it and encourage him to think positively, as a psychic on television when I was a child was always urging. I had dropped a brick, of course, with a bit about his brother, which came from a hellish innate gift.
Well, Christ, I mean, shitty death. You should be advertising the newspapers. I could bring my friends to see you.
Oh, come on, it's just peanuts.
I was pleased. It looked like I could relax, imagining there would be no more talk of sessions in the sack. Alas, his sexual fantasies now burst forth in a new direction.
Hey, I heard that if you sleep with a witch, you won't have any more problems in your life. Is that right?
Who's been putting that kind of nonsense in your head? Everything has to be by consent, otherwise.
Yes, I understand that. I won't say another word. Hey, I've never been with a witch. How do you do it with a witch?
Oh, spirits of light. I was facing a whole day and half of night of this, trying to rein in my benefactor's rampaging libido.
The road has become a morass, and time was now the wilting pocket watches painted by the psycho Delhi. My thoughts turned wistfully to my traveling companion, and I longed for our squad, a shower, and my own dear warm sleeping bag. In the end, I started feeling sorry for poor Vlad. By now he was fantasizing about carrying me off to his parents' village and installing me in a new house, smelling of wood shavings. We would go every Saturday to the bathhouse, and then leap naked into a stream and jump through fire all summer long. I would shield him from disease, and nothing bad would ever happen to him again. He would be top dog in the village, and all the chicks would jump out of their skirts and straight into bed with him. In his pagan erotic fantasies, I figured it was a cross between a water sprite, his personal magic goldfish, a leprechaun leading him to the crock of gold, and a magical huntress bestowing adamantine potency on all who shared her fragrant coniferous couch in the depths of the taiga, and showing them the way to the treasure. From these sudden outpourings of his subconscious, you could have researched the folklore of the planet. Who would have thought it, looking at that beer belly? In reality, he was just a fat, sweaty, kind man, hungry for love. His wife despised him. He lacked the education or upbringing to rise above his life, to gain insight into it from some break in the pattern of his existence. All the force of the love within him was focused on his son, whom his wife was always telling that daddy was bad. He hated her and was scared. He was longing for love, and inside him there lived a hurt little boy. There was nothing I could do to help, if only because whatever else he saw in me, he couldn't see me as a person. I sensed the indistinct shade of his dead brother hovering by my side window. He whispered his life story to me, eager to escape the captivity of death, a life just as unfocused and senseless. Their two incessant, piteous voices made my head ache and spin. I looked through the glass into the eyes of the spectre and listlessly gave the comment, "I release you. You're free." That was all he needed.
It is the only reason they come to trouble me, and I'm used now to doing it without worrying about the details. The spectre vanished like a swarm of gnats dispersed by the wind, and at that, blood took a turn. It occurred very suddenly, before I had time to figure out what was happening. His face went red and he grimaced, his eyes bulging. He started rocking forward towards the steering column. The truck veered to the left. I grabbed the stiff steering wheel and heaved it round towards myself. The truck swerved. Vladik instinctively jammed his foot down on the brake, and we came to a halt on the verge, facing a ditch. Just as well, the road was deserted. "Where do you keep your water?" I asked, clambering back. Long-distance drivers generally keep everything on their bunks. He gestured backwards, wide-eyed and afraid. His nose was bleeding, either because he had hit it on the steering wheel or from high blood pressure. I found everything we needed. Water, his first aid kit, dampened a bandage and put a cold compress over his nose and forehead. I opened the doors and a slight breeze, cool now as night, was falling. And more importantly, fresh entered the car. When Vlad recovered a bit, I got him out and we sat on the verge. "My brother used to have that," Vlad said, already getting over it. He was docile now, small and pathetic. "Fits. He wasn't allowed to drink or to drive either, but he did drive, very carefully, and only his Lada Samara. He didn't drink though, not a drop, only that one time. His wife had left him, and so he did drink. He couldn't even call it drinking, just a beer. The guys in the workshop bought him one, Friday it was. They were a bit surprised, but he didn't explain, just drove. He was coming to see me. I think he had the same as happened to me just now." I said nothing. His brother had just whispered all that to me, apologetically, saying goodbye. Only I hadn't been listening. I was feeling ill. Perhaps it was hearing it, or repeated now, or the sad voice of one of the living, that made me feel suddenly cold and wretched. We sat side by side, our backs to the road, not many cars passing. The terrain was hilly, and there was an abandoned field downhill from where we were. Further along, the slanting rays of the evening sun lit up some woodland, which cast a long, dark shadow over the road. "Do you get that often?" "What? Oh, that. No, I didn't get it all before my brother died. He was older than me. Genes, they say, but anyway, not often. Not often at all. I don't know why it happened just now. Just bad luck, I suppose. I haven't been drinking. Perhaps it was you got to me. You're hot," he smiled arcly. "Is anything hurting now?" "No, actually, yes. My head. Here." I got up, stood behind him, and began healing him with my hands, the way I knew, a light massage. He relaxed, loving it, leaned back and rested his head in my lap. 10 minutes later, I asked, "All right?" "Not bad," he murmured, opening his eyes and looking up slyly. "I feel great, as if we just slept together." I smacked his forehead and went to the truck. I was minded just to take my bag and say goodbye, but it was getting dark. There were no cars on the road, and I didn't have a tent. Hitching on your own at night would be worse than traveling with a preoccupied driver. The road is a gamble. You never know what hand it will deal you next. At least with Vlad, I was more or less in control. He crossed the road to the bushes and came back looking pale, with a tight grin on his face, as if he had found a corpse. I asked what was there, but he didn't reply, just started the truck and we drove. "It was only after we'd driven a few kilometers," he said. "Did you know you saved my life?" "How come?" "Back there, on the left, was a quarry. They've dug the sand out 20 meters down, right by the roadside. Moonlighters, damn them, digging away, no warning sign. They didn't bother to make good afterwards, the shits." We drove half the night and stopped at 3 o'clock in the morning at a cafe with good nighttime parking for trucks. I felt out of place in the empty, echoing cafeteria. The woman serving behind the counter eyed me impudently, like a competitor. I cringed inwardly. Vlad bought me a meal, and we went to sleep in the truck. "Come up here, don't worry, I won't touch you," he said, and we lay together on his bunk shelf, leaving my back on the seat. We shared a single scratchy blanket. He was soon asleep, wheezing, hugging me, patting my back, mumbling to himself as he did so. I was cramped and stuffy, and the window soon steamed up. There was fog outside. Dawn began to break, and I imagined the face of Vlad's brother through the glass, although I knew he was no longer here. Vlad woke up after 3 hours, as promised, and was surprised I wasn't sleeping. "What's wrong?" "It's too warm in here. I bet you've been casting spells," he said with a grin, and added wryly, "Witch." I could tell that everything that happened to him the previous day had been water off a duck's back. His robust, workmanlike personality was resistant to change. I let go of the reins I had seized yesterday, relieved we had almost reached our destination. Vlad gave me 10 rubles and told me to buy myself a coffee. Do you want anything? You, he answered shortly. I said no more, not feeling like coffee and even less like meeting up again with the woman in the squalid cafe. I shoved the tenner in my pocket, ran to an evil-smelling toilet, walked around in the dewy grass behind the cafe for a while and came back. Vlad had already started the engine and was smoking out the window. What took you so long? Did you get a drink? Right, let's go. I drove the whole way in silence. Vlad seemed almost embarrassed by my presence, either that or by his weakness yesterday. He was ill-mannered and spoke only to swear, calling his wife to say he was on his way and she should have a meal ready for him. The boss phoned, bawled him out for being behind schedule, complained he should have been back long ago. Vlad threw the receiver at the dashboard, was silent for a time, and then muttered, "What was that he said yesterday? If he fires me, I'll find a better job? Perhaps I should just leave now, eh? Why wait?" I said nothing. He was immersing himself once more in his life, and I was again just a girl he had picked up on the road, and who, when he dropped me off, he would drive away from and forget. I had no wish to be involved in his life. He led me out at his turning. He passed me my pack, and while I was sorting it, lit up a cigarette, not driving off, but looking at me appraisingly. I didn't care for that. It was time to say goodbye, and I was already thinking ahead, looking for a good position by hitching my next lead. "Well, goodbye then, which," he said, just a little too casually. "Too bad we didn't make it in the sack. Nothing doing when he could have sorted my life for me." He grunted loudly, slammed the door, and drove away.